You're listening to the second season of the Study Podcast with Dr. Paul Wegner on Genesis. I'm your host, Tyler Sanders, and I'm here with Dr. Paul Wegner, and he's going to give us the Hebrew words of the day.
Yeah.
We've been doing more than one.
Yeah, now we got two of them. Yeah. So, this is the first one. In Genesis 32, verse 1, it says, "Now Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. Jacob said when he saw them, 'This is God's camp.' So he named the place Menahem." Now, I don't know if you can tell, but it has a dual ending on that, which would mean two camps, literally.
Oh.
So I'm wondering if there were actually two angels, because otherwise I got no idea. Why would he just say two camps? He said these are God's camps. So I'm assuming it's linking up with how many angels were there.
That's an interesting idea.
Yeah. And I'm not actually sure what was going on when the angels of God met him, if they were encouraging him and stuff like that. If so, then I could see why he'd be ready for seeing Esau, you know, because the angels of God have already come and encouraged him.
Supporting, kind of. Yeah, sure.
Okay, that's the first one.
Okay.
And I'm assuming there must have been two angels, though I could be wrong on that.
Yeah.
All right, the other one is Panim. Now let's look at this. And Jacob asked him and said, "Please tell me your name." And he said, "Why do you ask my name?" And he blessed him there. So Jacob named the place Penaim, for he said, "I have seen God face to face, yet my life has been preserved." Now, I don't know if you can tell, but it's got the word God on it.
At the end.
And then the front part is the first three letters are name. Face.
Face.
Yeah. So it literally means face of God. Yeah. Now, we know for sure he didn't really see God, because Exodus tells us that no one can see God and live.
Yeah.
So my guess is that what he thinks he saw was God, though, even from this point, we remember that's when he was wrestling with this angel.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure it was an angel that he saw, but because he says, "You've wrestled with God and man," that I'm assuming that angel was acting in God's place, and so that's why he thought he had seen God.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, I think that's what our... Anyway, so two words that help us in this context of what we're talking about today.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right, so Jacob is afraid. He's coming back, and now he knows he's got to meet with Esau.
Yeah.
Okay?
He's been away. He's been safe kind of far away.
And he's been gone for 20 years, right?
Yeah, 20 years, right.
Yeah.
Long time.
Okay, so the messengers returned to Jacob saying, "We came to your brother Esau, and furthermore, he's coming to meet you with 400 men are with him." Now, think about Esau.
Yeah.
Last time he saw Jacob, he knew what Jacob was like. He was that old trickster.
I
can imagine that he would come thinking, "I wonder if this brother's mind's going to trick me and come after me." So I have a feeling that
Esau's being defensive.
I think so. So he's now, we can tell now he's no longer angry at him, but I think he's afraid of Jacob. So it's kind of fun that they're both just afraid
twist.
Of each other.
Yeah, I don't think I've read it like that. Yeah. I think I read it more like he was still.
Yeah.
Yeah,
angry,
upset. You know, I mean, that was the whole reason Jacob had to go, basically.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
I'm
pretty sure that does kind of make sense. Like,
he's worried.
He's lost a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Okay, verse 7. Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided his two people that were with him, the flocks and the herds and the camels, into two companies. And he said, "If Esau comes to the one company and attacks it, then the other company, which is left, can escape." Now he's thinking through, how do I preserve my family to the best of my ability, right?
Yeah.
And Jacob said, "O God of my father Abraham, the God of my father Isaac, O Lord, who said to me, 'Return to your country and to your relatives, and I will prosper you.'" Because remember, he's going on the assumption that God had already told him to come back, right? When he was up with Laban.
Yeah.
So that logic would make sense unless God's now going to wipe him out.
So
I'm assuming he knows that God's going to protect him. "I am unworthy of all the loving kindness and all the faithfulness which you have shown to your servant. For with my staff only I crossed the Jordan, and now I've become two companies. Deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him that he will come and attack me and the mothers with my children." If he's got 400 men, I don't know how many Jacob has with him, because I'm assuming he's got at least his family and that, but I doubt that he's got a lot of slaves and stuff like that with him.
Yeah.
So he's going to go up against 400 men, so I can see why he's afraid.
Yeah, they're both afraid. Really, that's kind of what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
Esau's probably afraid of Jacob because he's been kind of taken advantage of so many times.
Yeah.
Jacob is obviously, he's telling us he's afraid because of the number of men Esau has.
Yeah. Oh, can I show you where Menahem and Peniel is?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's up on the Transjordan side, on the other side of the Jordan River.
Okay.
And kind of across from Shechem there.
Yeah.
Okay.
And how far apart would that be? That doesn't look very far, but...
You mean Menahem from Shechem or Menahem and Peniel?
And Peniel. Menahem and Peniel.
I bet those are only a couple miles apart.
Yeah, pretty close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, over to Shechem is probably 15 miles. Probably.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That'll help some anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Then he commanded also the second and the third and all those who followed in droves. So this is saying he was sending out gifts, if you remember, to appease Esau.
Yeah.
Okay. After this matter, you shall speak to Esau when you find him, and you shall say, behold, your servant Jacob is behind us. For he said, I will appease him with the present that goes before me. Then afterward, I will see his face, and perhaps he will accept me. Hmm. Now, that's a little Jacob kind of doing kind of what Jacob does, right?
Yeah.
Tries to get on the good side of people, but also is trying to figure out, to his own logic, what's the best way for me to protect myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, verse 23. And then God took them he took them and sent them across the stream, and he sent across whatever he had. Then when he was left alone, a man wrestled with him until daybreak. Now when he saw that he had not prevailed against him, he touched the socket of his thigh, so that the socket of Jacob's thigh was dislocated while he wrestled with him. Then he said, let me go, for dawn is breaking. But he said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. So he said, what is your name? And he said, Jacob. And he said, your name shall no longer be Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. So now, we know in the Old Testament that when a name change happens, it usually means also a change of character.
Yeah.
And so I think this must be a turning point in Jacob's life.
Yeah.
He wants God's blessing so much that he's willing to not let go of this angel until he gets it.
Yeah.
Which I think before he wanted God's blessing, but I don't know how firm and what he would do to get it.
Hmm.
And I think now you're seeing he's willing to struggle as to the best of his ability. Now, I got to tell you, wrestling all night, they've got to be exhausted, right?
Sure, yeah.
And still, this angel, you know, I'm sure it's an angel, and I'm sure the angel was holding back, of course, right?
Right.
Of course
right.
He's stronger. But when he realizes that Jacob's not going to give up, then he hurts his thigh.
Yeah.
So that'd be even harder wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So so I think that's what's going on. And I think Jacob still is saying, no.
He's putting the effort forward.
Yeah. Even through all this pain, all this effort, I don't want to let you go until you bless me.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually what's causing Jacob to change. It's that pain, that willingness to go through almost anything before he'll let him go.
Right.
And I thought that's got to be a change factor here.
There's a bit of honesty to it as well, right?
Yeah.
Of like, I'm just going to like earn this the way I can.
At least the best I can,
And it's there's no kind of, you know.
Yeah.
There's no trickery or anything like that. There's no backup plan. It's like I have to do this.
That's good.
You know?
Yeah. All right, verse 29. Then Jacob asked him and said, please tell me your name. But he said, why is it that you ask my name? And he blessed him there. So Jacob named the place Peniel, for he said, I have seen God face to face, yet my life has been preserved. Now the sun rose upon him just as he crossed over Peniel, and he was limping on his thigh. Therefore, to this day, the sons of Israel do not eat the sinew of the hip, which is on the socket of the thigh, because he touched the socket of Jacob's thigh. In the sinew of his lips, or of his hip. Now, I have no idea when this was written, so I don't know how long they've been keeping up this tradition.
Yeah.
So I just thought I'd bring that up. I don't have any idea what it is, but it must have been sometime later they were keeping that tradition going.
And is that, what do you think the point of that tradition? Is that a like reminder of what Jacob, who's in Israel?
Almost like the Passover when they celebrate that, some big element in their history. Well, Jacob was one of their major forefathers, and so it's reminding them of what God did for him.
What that moment was.
Yeah. Now, the question I had is, why do they always ask to tell me your name? Here's what I thought it was. In the ancient Near East, in Egypt at least, there were five Egyptian names, and they would tell you four of them, but supposedly the last one they would never let anybody know because they thought that if they knew that name, they could then have control over them. And initially, I wondered if that's what Jacob was thinking. Huh. But then I found this passage. Manoah said to the angel of the Lord, what is your name? So that when your words come to pass, we may honor you. So I'm wondering if that's what it was. Hmm. The angel of the Lord said to him, why do you ask my name, seeing it is wonderful? So I'm thinking that maybe Jacob was asking his name so that he could
honor
or bless him when it actually happened.
Yeah.
I think because these are both angels, they don't want to take any credit for themselves. Yeah. So they're thinking, you don't need to know my name. You know that God is here working with you.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Jacob certainly got out of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Manoah got out of it too.
Right, right.
So I think it makes more sense now that they were thinking, oh, then we'll bless them. And both angels are thinking, no, you don't do that.
We're the emissary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, that helps me. So I actually think that probably makes some sense.
That makes a lot of sense to me, actually. Yeah.
All right. The name change suggests that Jacob was a different person. Mm-hmm. And it appears that Jacob really did want God's blessing, and he was willing to fight for it. What was God trying to teach him, I assume, is that he would not be able to do it on his own. Mm. And even though he can struggle and all that, I assume that's why he even went the step further and even harmed his thigh.
Yeah.
So I guess that was to see if Jacob would, when he was in his most pain possible, would he then give up? And the answer was no. He was still going to keep hanging on.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that even with his own weaknesses, he was still saying, no, God, I need you. I can't do this on my own.
Well, and I kind of can see in this too. I mean, it's hard to tell because I haven't looked at the Hebrew of this, so maybe you can tell me.
Yeah.
But the word touch, he just touches him. It seems very like there's not much force.
Yeah.
So there in my mind, there's a... there's a sense in this wrestling and this fight of like, okay, they've been struggling together for a long time, but like here's an expression of power. Like I'm really not that tired. With a touch, I can kind of knock you out almost.
Yeah.
And there's this sense of like you're not gonna win this. Like you're fighting super hard, but like you kind of can't overcome this, which I think would reflect that idea of like, you can't do this on your own. Like, you're not going to be able to work your way through this.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's part of what's going on there. Yeah. Good. All right, so that's that part.
Yeah, that's a great passage.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's probably, I think we all know that. That's one of the passages I think that's kind of hard to understand. I know this isn't the same podcast, but we're doing one with Dr. Gertner right now too, and it's all about conceptions and misconceptions in the Gospels. And that's one I feel like the narrative of that story is very engaging. A lot of Christians know this. They have that imagery in their head, but it's a tough one to pick apart, I think.
And I think now we see that it was a crucial step in Jacob's life.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, then verse 9. Then God appeared to Jacob again when he came from Padan Aram, and he blessed him. And God said to him, your name is Jacob. You shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel will be your name. Thus he called him Israel. Mm-hmm. God also said to him, I am God Almighty. Be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall come from you, and kings shall come forth from you. Now, this is later. This is several chapters later.
Yeah.
And God has to remind him that his name is no longer Jacob, but it's Israel. And I'm wondering if that's almost like a chastening. I think he's telling Jacob, you better act like your new name.
Yeah,
because
this is
several chapters later. And so I'm assuming he's still acting like that Jacob, and God's saying, we've got this covenant with you, and you're carrying it on.
Yeah.
I need you to act like Israel, not like Jacob anymore. Yeah. Trust me. Yeah. So I thought that was important. All right, in chapter 31, Jacob lifts his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau's coming. So now, again, Jacob is afraid. Now, God's already now blessed him and all this stuff.
Yeah, we've had the moment. Yeah.
Okay.
The critical moment.
So Esau's coming and with 400 men. So he divided the children among Leah and Rachel and the two maids. And he put the maids and their children in front, and Leah and her children next, and Rachel and Jacob last. Now, first of all, did you catch that? Poor Leah just got jabbed again.
Yeah.
Right? Here, she's now out ahead of the wife he really loves.
In case Esau is ready to kill everybody.
Yeah. You go first, Leah.
Yeah. Yeah, that is.
Okay, then rough. It sounds like, now Jacob's at the end, but he changes. All right, but he himself passed on ahead of them. So, okay, so he's not a jerk.
Yeah.
Bowed down to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. Then Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. In the ancient Near East, to have somebody run to somebody else is really unusual. Mm. Even in, I don't know if you remember in the New Testament when the father runs the prodigal son.
Yeah.
Those are...
That's a big sign
Yep. Those are amazing signs that here's Esau. And when he runs to him, now he knows. Now Jacob knows.
Yeah.
It's okay. He would never do that if it was only if he was coming to harm me.
Yeah.
So I thought that's good.
That is.
All right. Jacob humbly meets his brother, bowing down to the ground, and Esau runs to Jacob and kisses him, then he sees all the Jacob's family. God had indeed solved Jacob's problem, but you know how he did it? He had blessed both of them so much that neither of them needed to worry about it. And I think that's what, imagine, Jacob got ripped off twice, right?
Yeah.
Esau got ripped off twice.
Yeah.
So he got the firstborn blessing taken away. He got the blessing of the father.
Yeah.
Okay. Or the firstborn right, we'll call it, and the blessing of the father. But I assume the whole reason you want those is because the blessing would give you things that would make your family stronger and better.
Yeah,
and all
you get the responsibility, but you're inheriting the...
Yeah, but now if you look, Esau now has more... He actually says to him, I've got more than I need.
Yeah.
And Jacob obviously at this point had more than he had to worry about. So, so I think that God solved the problem by making sure they both were so well provided for that they knew they were being blessed by God and it didn't even matter.
Yeah.
So I think that's how God solved this problem.
Yeah.
So I thought that was helpful.
Yeah.
All right. He definitely had gotten over his anger. There's no doubt about that.
For sure, yeah. And Jacob had changed too.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't expect the Jacob from earlier to bow down, I think.
Yeah. And, okay, that's true,
you know,
too.
Maybe have that kind of honest humility.
Yeah.
And both of them were blessed specifically by God because Jacob also, he misspoke a second earlier, but it was actually true. He got taken advantage of a lot, you know, but still, you know, God blessed him through that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm wondering if when he's bowing down, it's to appease Esau again.
Sure, yeah.
I'm almost sure part of that is that.
Yeah.
But you're right. He could have come in a totally different way, and he doesn't.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Esau does not need the presents for they both brothers have been blessed. Okay. Yeah. Esau says, I've got plenty, my brother. Let what you have be your own. And Jacob says, no, please, if I have found favor in your sight, then take the present from my hand. For I see your face as one who sees the face of God. I think what he meant is that by seeing Jacob and that Jacob was no longer angry, he knew that God had blessed Jacob now because he was so worried that he was going to be killed by Esau.
Right.
And now when he sees his face, he knows that he's not angry and that God has actually blessed them both and healed the relationship.
Yeah.
So I think that's what he means when he says that.
Yeah.
And you have received me favorably. Please take my gift, which has been brought to you, because God has dwelt graciously with me and because I have plenty. Thus he urged him and he took it. I assume that if Esau would have not taken the gift, in the ancient Near East, it's almost like an embarrassment to reject a gift from somebody.
Right.
So I'm assuming at that point, it was almost an honor thing that he would accept the gift, even though he doesn't need it.
Yeah.
So okay, I thought that was good. All right. Jacob lives in Sukkoth and then goes to Shechem. Let's read this. And Esau said, let us take your journey and go, and I will go before you. But he said to him, my Lord knows that the children are frail and that the flocks and herds are which are nursing are a care to me. And if they are driven hard even one day, all the flocks will die. Please let my Lord pass on before his servant, and I will proceed at my leisure according to the pace of the cattle that are before me and according to the pace of the children until I come to my Lord at Seir. So it sounds like he's going to go down. Mount Seir would be down in Edom, and it sounds like he's going to go down there, at least be with him for a while.
Yeah.
Though the biblical text doesn't say that. He actually says that he goes to Shechem, or Sukkoth, and then goes over to Shechem. So the biblical text never does tell you this. So look what it says. So Esau returned that day on his way to Seir. That's where Esau lived. Uh-huh. And Jacob journeyed to Sukkoth and built for himself a house and made booth for his livestock and a place in the place named Sukkoth. Now Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, which he came from Paddan Aram and camped before the city. So the biblical text never ever says that he goes down to Seir to
be
with
Esau
him.
Was.
Yeah. Wow. It's very possible that the text is just condensed and that that actually happened. Because, I mean—
Oh, and maybe this is like—
Yeah.
Happening later.
Or a shortening of it. And so it just dropped out some stuff.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that's probably what happened, because I think it would have been a real embarrassment if Jacob had not come down at least been with Esau for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. So that's what I'm thinking happened. All right. Now we've got Dinah's rape. And this is an interesting thing. Let's look through it. Now, Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had borne to Jacob, went to visit the daughters of the land. And Shechem, the son of Hamor the Hivite, the prince of the land, saw her, and he took her and lay with her by force. He was deeply attracted to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and he loved the girl and spoke tenderly to her. Now, at that point, I've actually heard just commentators say that it was Dinah's fault. Because they were supposed to stay in the tents and were not supposed to go down. But to go down to visit the daughters of the land sounds, in my mind, perfectly legitimate. And I don't see any problem with that. And remember, we know that Rachel was a shepherdess, she would go take care of the sheep and stuff. So I don't see that as being something really, really wrong.
Right.
What is clearly wrong is what Shechem, the son of Hamor, does to her.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's what rape would sound like. The Hebrew way to explain that would be he lay with her by force.
But with force. Yeah, that's the
terminology would normally be used. Yeah. All right, so Shechem told Hamor to go get her for him as a wife. And that all sounds legitimate and all that. The only problem is, why did he have to rape her? Couldn't he wait a little longer and just get her as a wife?
Right.
Okay? Now, I'm not sure that Jacob would have given her, because, right, they're Canaanites.
Sure,
so
right,
mixing
right.
with the Canaanites would not have been something that he should have done.
Yeah.
So I don't know what would happen there, but he didn't even get the opportunity to reject that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Jacob said they needed to be circumcised, and after they did, Levi and Simeon killed them.
Yeah.
And it kills all the males and plundered them.
Yeah.
Jacob is actually mad and said, he's mad at them and said, they could have wiped out our whole family. You know, and that's very possible.
Yeah.
And they say, well, should they treat our sister like a harlot? No, of course that's true.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have. But also, I don't think they should have killed every man. It was Shechem that did it. It wasn't all of them.
Right.
Even the biblical text seems to suggest that these two brothers went way too far. If you go to the blessing, remember we had seen those in Genesis 49?
Yeah.
Well, here's what it says. Simeon and Levi are brothers. Their swords are implements of violence. Let my soul not enter into their council. Let not my glory be united with their assembly. Because in their anger they slew men, and in their self-will they lamed oxen. Cursed be their anger, for it was fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I would disperse them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. So it sounds like they're almost being punished for their wrath.
Right.
And I think this is the passage that lets me know, I think they went overboard. They went way beyond what they should have ever done.
Right.
So my guess is they could have taken Hamor to Shechem.
Dealt
with it that way.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I remember when we were talking about Isaiah, that there was a lot of talk. There's a lot of justice talk in Isaiah, there's a big emphasis throughout it that God wants just punishment.
Yeah.
That He doles out appropriate.
Yeah.
Punishment.
Yeah.
And this could be inappropriate.
Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely too far, I think. All right. God tells Jacob to move to Bethel and finish the vow that he made to God. Remember when he left Bethel? Mm-hmm. So if you look at Shechem is up there, Bethel is now maybe 15 miles south.
South, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Tells us, and at that point, Jacob tells his family to put away their foreign gods, and they move to Bethel. I thought that was interesting. They still got those foreign gods. Yeah. But if you think about it, if they believe in local gods, these are their gods from where they live. And it would make sense that they'd still keep hanging on until now they've definitely got to get rid of them. They're in a new land and stuff. Yeah. Okay. God had protected them on the way. In fact, it says in the passage that God made them these nations fear so that they didn't follow Jacob.
And right.
So I thought that was helpful. God's still protecting them.
Yeah.
Jacob built an altar there, and God appeared to him and blessed him. That's where he changes his name to Israel again.
That's that second.
Yeah, that's that second one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rachel dies on the way to Bethlehem, giving birth to Benjamin. Now he's got all 12 of his sons.
They're all there, yeah. Yeah.
All right. Here's 35:1. And God said to Jacob, rise and go up to Bethel and live there and make an altar there to the God who appeared to you when you fled from your brother Esau. And Jacob said to his household, and then now he's going to tell him, put away all these foreign gods.
Yeah.
Oh, and even, I thought it was interesting, purify yourself and change your garments. So I'm assuming what that's saying, okay, you're going to meet with this God now. Get prepared for that.
Yeah.
So I've always wondered if that's where your Sunday best came in, where you where people saw this passage and thought, well, when you're meeting with God, maybe you should
be
presentable and be dressed like it. I just thought it was funny. You know?
Yeah.
All right. And let us arise and go to Bethel, and I will make an altar there to God, who has answered me on the day of my distress and has been with me wherever I've gone. You know, that part was obvious, wasn't it? When he was up with Laban, it almost immediately you could tell that he was being blessed by God because of all the wealth and stuff that was coming to Laban because of what Jacob was doing.
Yeah.
So he saw that. So they gave Jacob all the foreign gods which they had and the rings which were in their ears. I'm assuming those rings are going to be symbols for their foreign gods and stuff.
Yeah, it's related to the religious practice.
And Jacob hid them under the oak, which is near Shechem. So if you want to go get some antiquities, that would probably be the place to go
find
them. And they journeyed there, and there was great terror upon the cities which were around them, and they did not pursue the sons of Israel or Jacob. I think that's telling us now that God's protecting them as they left.
Yeah.
Okay.
You'd love to know how that happened, though.
Yeah.
Why? You know, like what's going on? Are they, is it just the rumors of them coming through? Like, what is it that's making people so?
Yeah.
Or is it just God putting this emotion? I mean, it's.
Yeah.
I wish I knew more.
Yeah. I have no idea. Yeah. It is a great terror. So that whatever it was, they were afraid.
Yeah. And they're protected.
After them.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So here's our conclusion.
Okay.
God uses fear to change us in building faith. And I think you saw that in Jacob many times. Even when Laban was doing stuff to Jacob, I'm assuming there's times he could have been afraid.
Sure.
And God had blessed him. But the time I really saw was when he was coming to meet Esau.
Yeah.
And that fear now forces him to rely totally on God.
Yeah.
And I've actually been there. I mean, I know what that's like to be afraid and wonder, is God going to provide for us and not?
Yeah.
So I think that really, I think that's one of God's strongest tools that he uses. Mm. I wished he didn't have to, but I'm afraid he does.
Yeah.
On almost all of us.
Yeah.
So, all right. Jacob really wants God's blessing and won't let that angel go until he blesses him. So that was really important.
Oh, yeah.
And a major change in Jacob's life, I think.
Yeah.
God protects Jacob, even we just saw it just now.
Yeah,
too.
All the way to the end.
Yeah. Dinah's rape was wrong, no doubt about that. But Simeon and Levi overcompensated by killing all of the Hivites or the male Hivites.
Yeah.
And I think we see the anger in that one really causes people to do some really nasty things.
Yeah.
That didn't need to be done.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they'll suffer for that later.
Yeah.
God has to step in to protect Jacob and his family multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
And he did it up with Levi and, I'm sorry, when he was
Laban.
Up in Laban and does it all the way through.
Yeah.
So I thought that was good. And then Jacob finally kept his part of the vow. Remember, his part was, I'll give you a tenth of everything I have and your God will be my God.
Right.
When they are taking off their idols and stuff like that, and then when they're changing their clothes, that was a major change in their lives, and they're now saying, okay, now we are serving
God. Yeah, we're putting the stuff off.
Yeah. I thought that was really good. And it maybe is. It's just a real good picture of people when they change their clothes.
Sure, yeah.
It's a good picture for them that this is a new element in their life.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was some of the things I thought were really helpful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love this. This is one of my favorite sections of Genesis. I think as you get further in Genesis, the narrative is a little more. I think it's a little bit easier for us to follow, kind of the Western mindset. You know, there's a little bit more. It moves at a little different pace and stuff. Yeah. This has always been one of my favorite sections.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Bye bye.